There can be no question that just over 2,000 years ago, a man named Jesus, or as a Roman historian about that time called him Crestus, misunderstanding the title Christ, was crucified. Crucifixion was designed to humiliate the victim, putting him in a public place, naked, nailed to a cross. It was designed to torture the victim by not allowing blood to escape or by assaulting the major organs so that they would die slowly. It was meant to punish the worst of criminals. And they used it to say, "We are in charge. It is our kingdom that prevails. And this is what happens to anybody who crosses us." There can be no doubt that that happened to Jesus 2,000 years ago. I don't know anybody except crazies that would disagree. The question is, what was the significance of that event? Was he a revolutionary or mistaken for a revolutionary and got caught up in the wheels of justice? Was he a fraud? A fraud who's trying to be somebody who's not and unfortunately got nailed for it? Was he a martyr? Someone who by taking the side of the poor and the helpless finally got caught by those who didn't appreciate it? Or was he a helpless, unfortunate pawn that simply got caught up in the political machinations that were taking place at that time? These are all interpretations that were given very early and that have been given all through history. And they are possible interpretations, I suppose. But Luke comes and he says, that's not what happened. And he begins his gospel by saying, Theophilus, I'm going to tell you what happened. And I'm going to give you what I think is the true interpretation of that event. And not only is he giving us a true interpretation, he is inviting us to enter in to that interpretation and to believe what he says. He is claiming to be a witness that is witnessing on behalf of God, saying this is what happened. It would take literally a year of sermons to unpack the incredibly complex ways that Luke interprets this event. I used to think Luke was just a neutral telling of the story. It is a complex telling of the story. It is subtle. It is just full of interpretation. But Luke invites you to take his view of this event. And I want to give you in a very, very short time, 5 minutes or so, five ways that Luke is trying to help you interpret this event. He begins his gospel by opening, saying, what I'm giving you is a world history. And he uses a very set form to say, the events I'm about to narrate are not just for the Jews. These events are important for the entire world. These events stand at the center of universal history and are significant for all. He then moves to minor characters, Zechariah and Elizabeth, and he begins to unfold his story. And very quickly you get a sense as he's moving that he is moving towards the climactic moment of that story. And as we have seen in chapters 9 to 19, he begins to intensify that by taking us to Jerusalem. And on the way to Jerusalem, he is highlighting whatever is going to take place there is going to be the most significant events in all of Israel's history. This is not only events that are climactic for the world. It's climactic events for the Old Testament story and Israel's history. But then as we get into the narration of this telling of the story, as we arrive in Jerusalem and see those major events that take place, the crucifixion and the resurrection being central, and then his ascension and the outpouring of the Spirit and the sending of the disciples, as we come to understand these events, What we see is Luke is opening up for us their meaning. And in this short passage that Janet read for us, he's using a number of things to give his view, his interpretation of what took place. He uses irony. He's a master of irony, Luke is. And what he does is he shows the rulers saying, let him save himself if he's the Messiah, God's chosen one. But we, the reader, know that these rulers are testifying to the truth. He is the Christ, the Messiah, the chosen one. And then when the soldiers offer him cheap wine for a cheap king, as they understand it, they say, if you're the king of the Jews, save yourself. Again, irony. Because we know that what they've just testified to is true. He is the king of the Jews. And then the irony of the written notice that stands above, this is the king of the Jews. And again, Luke's readers know that this is what is who Jesus really is. And so as we enter into the irony of this event, we hear these men proclaim who Jesus is. And note how they bring salvation and the Messiahship together. At all times, they bring those two together. And we know from the telling of the story that Jesus is the Christ, and it is going to be through this event that he brings salvation. But the Jews and the Romans cannot figure how kingship and salvation can possibly fit with the cruelty of the cross. But we have been let in on this in the telling of the story that it's only through this event that as the king, he'll bring salvation. But then fourthly, we hear the words of the criminal. That criminal who says to the other one, don't you fear God? Since you are under the same sentence, we're punished justly for what we're getting for what our deeds deserve, but this man has done nothing wrong. And then he says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And we are now to identify with that testimony, because now we are hearing a true testimony that it's this cross that is going to usher in the kingdom. And this criminal says, I want to participate in that. I believe. And that's what he wants us to do as we listen to that criminal. But then fifthly, it's Jesus himself who interprets this event. All the way through Luke, he keeps pointing this as a necessity by which the kingdom of God will come. But now here he is about to be humiliated, tortured, and crucified. And what does he say? Father. He is still the Son of God. Forgive them. He still has the authority to forgive sins. And then he says at the end of this text, truly I tell you, today you'll be with me in paradise. This cross is going to accomplish the new creation, and already today you are going to begin to experience that salvation. Jesus himself tells us the meaning of this event. We could go on, and I could give about 25 more very quickly. But in all of this, Luke is pointing to this event as the central event, the mightiest of God's acts, the way that he will accomplish the salvation of the world. And he's inviting us to believe that too. He's inviting us to take hold of that as well. And as his story continues, Jesus rises from the dead, is alive to give life, and as he pours out his Spirit, he then gives us that salvation that has been accomplished at the cross, if we're willing to take hold of it in faith. We've heard this story so many times that it's become so familiar to us. How can we somehow step back and see how absurd Luke's interpretation on the surface seems to be? Humiliation, torture, capital punishment, God's mighty act. Yes, says Luke. But how can anybody possibly believe that? Only, says Luke, as his story continues in Acts, if there's a community that believes it, and a community that lives by it. A community that already has entered into the salvation that Christ has accomplished and becomes a living embodiment in the midst of the world, saying, it's in the cross and the resurrection of Christ that the salvation of the world has been accomplished. And we, as the bearers of His Spirit, lived under the Lordship of Christ. And as a community that witnesses in that way, people can say, surely this man was the Son of God, the King who brought salvation, even from a cross. Let's continue with our reflection on Luke's interpretation.